You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
So it's first and goal with John White. He's got a hole. Touchdown.
First Tiger Cat touchdown for John White.
From 42 yards out. Airolahu nails it. Frankie Williams, a step, and now Oakley. Williams beats a man, got a blocker. Nobody gonna catch him. Frankie Williams with the first punt return touchdown for the Ticats this year. 21 yards was his longest return until that one. He goes 98.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, dude, I don't even know how to start this. Normally we kick off the shows each week talking about the game that just happened, but Sunday night happened, and there were no games Sunday night, and we have to talk about that first. I think it'd be disingenuous to leave this until later in the show. This is the big news, maybe one of the biggest trades in... Okay, can you think of a trade bigger than this in the last little while, at least from like a media hype standpoint?
No, not at all. Like I go back into the Wayback Machine and think about that Tracy Ham trade where it was like, you know, A players for A players or something crazy, but that was a way long time ago. But no, not in the recent past, definitely not.
So to fill everyone in, although I assume everyone who listens to our show is well aware that the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Montreal Alouettes consummated what I think can legitimately be called a blockbuster trade. The Hamilton Tiger Cats acquired Canadian defensive end Jamal Westerman, former all-star receiver Chris Williams, and two first-round draft picks, one in 2020, one in 2021, from the Owls for Tony Washington, Landon Rice, and some backup quarterback. I want to say his name is Johnny Manziel, but I could be wrong, but obviously I kid. Johnny Manziel's been traded to the Alouettes. The Ticats get this massive haul. Let's dig into this, Mike, and the first question is, what do you think? Do you like the trade? Do you not like the trade? What were your kind of first thoughts when you saw this pop up on your screen Sunday night?
Well, there is a couple of different reactions to it, really. At first I was a little bit concerned about losing the offensive lineman, but then you look at the players we got back, and you know, Westerman,
stud,
you know, he's obviously a Canadian too. That changes our ratio on the defensive line. He's 33 years old, but I still believe he's performing a very, very high level. And Chris Williams, you know, a guy that we're very familiar with, a guy that we had and, you know, was just amazing on kick return, punt returns when he's with the Tiger Cats. Now he's shaping into a legitimate receiver. So to get him into the offense with his speed, combining with all the other speedy receivers we have, I mean, Brandon Banks and Chris Williams on the same field, on the same team, is just a scary thought for defenses, I think. So overall, Josh, I think we won this trade.
If we take the names out of it, like, honest, like, make this, okay.
And the draft picks, of course, are huge. So for the present and the future, we did pretty well, I think.
And think about this. So the Ticats traded a starting offensive lineman, a rotational, although a much used Canadian offensive lineman, and a backup quarterback. And in return, they got an all-star defensive end who's a legitimate starter and a ratio breaker as a Canadian. They got an all-star caliber receiver who I believe has 4,000-yard seasons in his five or six years in the CFL, two of those including with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And they got two first-round picks. If you take the name Johnny Manziel out of this, because that's what attracts the headlines, there's no way you can look at this trade and not say the Ticats robbed the Alouettes here. And I know that the Alouettes need a quarterback. Johnny Manziel's going to go there. He's going to get a chance to start. Good for him. But if you just take what these players were to each team and what they mean to the league as a whole, The Hamilton Tiger Cats absolutely stole these guys from the Owls. For think about it. It's legitimately a backup quarterback, and that's not a shot at Manziel. That's what he was. And they got a stud Canadian all-star defensive end to pair with their stud Canadian defensive tackle in Ted Laurent, Justin Capicotti, who's another Canadian. They could legitimately start three Canadians on the defensive line. They got Chris Williams, who is a stud all-star caliber receiver who came off an injury. He tore his ACL in Ottawa, had a down year in BC. But if you watch how he played in Montreal this year, it looked like he was starting to regain that form of old. He's only 30 years old. That's not ancient. He's a speed guy. We got a quarterback with a big arm. We have an offense that, for the most part, likes to throw deep. You pair him now with the rest of those receivers, Banks, Tolliver, Tasker, Saunders, Mike Jones. Like, this is lethal. And then you throw in two first-round picks, which not only are they good, you're taking two first-round picks from a team in your division. The Owls now don't pick in the first round until 2022. That's insane. There's no way to look at this trade when you look at the pieces in that way that this is anything but a win for the Ticats.
Yeah, and a big, big panic move by Cavis Reed and the Alouettes. This guy is throwing everything, you know. They're going for it now, even though they're giving away really good players. I mean, they're trying to win now, and that's what they're not thinking about the future at all right now. So, yeah, I'm worried about the Alouettes' future, but what the hell do I care, right?
But you know what? if they think about this too, like, they went out and they traded for the guy they think can be their guy at quarterback. Now, I'm not sure if Johnny Manziel can be a stud. I'm not sure. And if he becomes – if he's as good – remember when June Jones said, and we talked about this on the pod back in January, Johnny Manziel could be the greatest player to ever play in the CFL. And people laughed at it. And look, I'm not saying that I think June Jones is right, but they trade him. And if he becomes that player, he's gone after 2019. Like, even if he could – let's say he goes to the Owls and he lights it up and they win the next two Grey Cups. He's the guy that turns their franchise around. He is not here in 2020, and they're right back to square one looking for a quarterback. If he stinks the joint out, and I really hope that's not the case, because as I said on Twitter just before you and I started recording, I was watching the press conference that they had introducing him to the Montreal media. And I have to say that every single time since Johnny Manziel's come to Canada that there's been a microphone in his face, he has said the perfect – like, he's been – like, he's just said the right thing. And there's been no missteps. There's been no – like, all that – we talked about – or we tried not to talk about – we talked about a bit in the offseason, this attitude that he would have and all those sorts of stuff. And then you get the guy in the room and you hear him talk and you're – I was impressed. I'm not going to speak for anyone else. I was impressed. I'm a fan of Johnny – like, I like Johnny Manziel, the football player. I'm becoming a fan of Johnny Manziel, the person, based on hearing him talk. He's kind of made a fan for me in life. I hope he has nothing but success for the rest of his career, because I feel like he genuinely is trying to turn his life around. And in a league about second chances, he's getting his, and he's doing everything right. But that said, if he stinks out the joint, the Owls are back to square one again. If he plays phenomenally, he's going back to the NFL. The Owls are back to square one again. So the only scenario in which this works out for Montreal longer than the next year and a half is if he's okay. And if he's okay, then they're like, you know, they're a 500 team, which is fine, but this isn't Anthony Calvillo redux, which I've seen. This is just like when the Ticats let go of Calvillo and went to Montreal. Manziel's not playing in Montreal for 15 years, you know what I mean? Like, and if he does, that means that he's been okay. So
And if he's just okay, then he's just another player. He's just another CFL player in the eyes of, you know, people that would be drawn to Johnny Manziel. If he's just okay, then he's just another CFL. He's not like there's going to be no attraction there from fans to come to the game. So I do hope that this gives Montreal a little kick in the ass, you know, for their market, and they start selling out the barn, and it's an exciting time for Montreal at football. But like you said, it's not going to last very long, no matter what. I don't think it's going to be this season and next season, and then he's probably going to be gone. We don't know the options are for other football leagues too, like that American football, whatever thing is opening up in 2019.
The Alliance of American Football.
Yeah, like I don't think those leagues are going to take off necessarily, but there are other options out there, which would be in his home country, right? So the Alouettes are looking to win right now, and they're laying it all on Johnny Manziel.
And here's the thing, too. So we hear a lot about, man, when he signed or when he was coming to sign, he's worth every penny that you pay. If you pay him $500,000, it's worth it because he's going to sell jerseys and he's going to sell out the stadiums and all that stuff. Well, now we get to put that opinion to rest. We either get to see it in action or we get to see that it's a load of hogwash because all the Montreal, big market city. If Johnny Manziel starting can't get fans to that, especially if he plays well, can't get fans to that stadium, that obliterates that. Manziel's going to start when the Alouettes go to Toronto. Let's see what attendance is like there. Are the people in Toronto just drawn to superstars? Because this guy is, by the very definition of the term, a superstar. He's a known, he's a celebrity, he's a known commodity. Let's see if him starting for a team that is in a big market and will play other teams in other big markets, let's see if there's a bump in ticket sales. If there is, I will gladly come in here and go, man, Johnny Manziel going to Montreal was really good for the Alouettes and for them when they traveled, helped attendance. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case, but we're going to get to find out. And I think that that's an interesting thing to keep looking at going forward.
Yeah, it's a good thing for the CFL, I think, in the short term, that Johnny Manziel's on the field, you know. He's going to draw eyeballs. People are going to buy tickets to see him. Like you said, he's a
famous
guy.
ESPN can promote the crap out of him starting in a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that I just want to touch on real quickly is this notion that he's moving to Montreal. So all of a sudden he's going to be elbows deep in cocaine and strippers. It's like,
ridiculous.
It's like, yes, he has a past. He used to be a partier. I don't know him personally, so I can't say this for sure, but I think that's past him. I think that he knows that if he goes into that lifestyle again, it's over for him in the CFL, in the NFL, in pretty much any league. So I don't see him turning into a partier just because he's in Montreal. And I know there's a lot of temptations in Montreal, but I don't foresee it happening.
If he was going to get in trouble, he would have already gotten in trouble. Hamilton, Sure, it's not Montreal, but it's not like this is some dry county where you can't get a drop of alcohol or find drugs. Like,
exactly.
You can get into trouble in Hamilton. I've lived here most of my life. I was a teenager here. I know you can get in trouble in Hamilton. Toronto is 45 minutes away. Johnny Manziel is not broke. He could afford to travel to Toronto in his off time and go partying. We never heard that he did that, so I'm going to take that as an assumption that he didn't. If you're a guy who just wants to find trouble or wants to part, you can find that anywhere. You can find that in Regina if you wanted to. You know what I mean? Like the idea that all the temptation is going to be there in Montreal. The temptations are all around him all the time, no matter where he is. Maybe there's more temptation in Montreal, but if he was able to keep his nose clean living an hour away from Toronto, I don't see why this would change anything. I think, like you said, he's trying to turn his life around. I don't see that this is going to be – I don't know. This to me is like you're not wishing that he slips up, but if that's your first inclination, I what does that say about you?
Yeah, it's kind of making light of
a serious situation.
A situation that I know people have gone through it, and it's not funny at all.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible. And, I have total confidence that Johnny Manziel – is not going to do any of that stuff. He probably keeps to himself. Like, he probably won't even go out at all. Like, I don't know. I wish him all the best, though. He was a good Tiger Cat, as far as I'm concerned. He did nothing wrong, and there's no ill feelings at all.
And let's dispel the rumor. There obviously people are going to say he pushed himself out of town. That's not true. I'm not going to divulge who I've talked to. That's not what I'm here for. But I have talked to some people who know some things, and they said – that is not what happened. This took them, Johnny Manziel and his representation, this took them by as much surprise as it took everybody else. The Ticats were not actively shopping Manziel. And I'm sure everyone's heard the story. Cavis Reed flew into Toronto, met face-to-face with both Eric Tillman and Scott Mitchell, and they hammered out this deal Saturday and Sunday. So this was not a case of Johnny Manziel forcing himself out of Hamilton. Let's not use this as an excuse now to run this guy out of town and rip him because he's on another team. He was nothing but a first-class member of this organization, and I think that's how it should be remembered. And if you're a fan and you're doing a happy dance or whatever because Manziel's gone, I wish you wouldn't, honestly, because no way did Johnny Manziel tarnish the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and I think he was a model citizen while he's here. And like I said earlier, I wish him nothing but the best. But let's talk about what the Ticats got in this, because we only briefly talked. We spent so much time talking about Johnny Manziel, and he's not even here anymore. You look at the haul. Chris Williams is the one that stands out because this is a weird scenario. How often do you see a guy who had a somewhat, I would say, acrimonious split from a team end up coming back? And sure, it's the CFL, it's a small league, so of course stuff like that happens. But man, did you see some of the vitriol thrown at Chris Williams when it was announced that he would be returning to Hamilton? There are some fans who have some pretty long memories and aren't really willing to forgive how he got out of Hamilton the last time.
Yeah, I did see it, and it's a bit surprising. I mean, that was a while ago.
It was 5 years
ago. Yeah, and Chris Williams was trying to do what was best for Chris Williams and his family. And like we've talked about many times on this podcast, football careers are very, very short. So you have to take advantage of opportunities. And the opportunity came to try out for an NFL team, to try out for the NFL, to make that big money for a couple of years, to set yourself up for a decent future. And he took it. And maybe the way he left, it bothered the fans a bit because he still had 1 year left on his contract, and I get that. But listen, like, you have to put that in the past. He's a Ticat now. He's back with us. He's in the prime of his career, or you could argue, just hitting 30 years old. He looked amazing in the last couple games for the Alouettes. I know he was out with injury the last game, but I think he can be a huge contributor to this team. And let's just put the past in the past and cheer on this guy right now, because he adds even more speed to this receiving core. Brandon Banks, Jalen Saunders, Chris Williams now. I mean, those three guys are speed. They have speed to burn. So I think that it's a great thing having him back. And he won't have any problem coming back to the Tiger Cats, I believe, because, you know, Austin was the head coach and GM at the time. The hard feelings, I believe, were between him and Austin. So Austin is still part of the team, I think, in some manner, a consultant of some sort. But he's not going to be there on a daily basis. So I don't think there'll be any problem Chris Williams coming into this team.
Chris Williams leaving was business. It wasn't personal. He never talked bad about the organization, never talked bad about Ken Austin, never talked bad about the city, never badmouthed the fans. It was a business decision. There's no one left on this roster save for, I believe, Mike Filer that was on this team when Chris Williams played here before. The entire coaching staff has been turned over. The entire front office has essentially been turned over. And the only people who are still here, Sean Burke, who's assisting GM, Drew Alamang, who's the Canadian scout draft guru, and Scott Mitchell are really the only guys left. And look, if there was any lingering feelings about Chris Williams, he wouldn't have been a part of this deal. But I see the fans, and they're so angry about this. And I just put it this way. If you work at a place and you knew you could get more money somewhere else, even if you had a binding contract, if you went to work and said to your boss, look, I know I have a year left on my contract that you signed me for, but this place down the road, they're going to pay me twice, three times, 10 times as much money as you're paying. Chris Williams making $52,000 a year when he was with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Let's not forget that he was still on his rookie deal. Someone came to you and said, we can give you eight times your salary. And your boss says, no, to hell with you. You're going to fight to get out of that deal to try to find that. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Anyone would do what Chris Williams did. And look, fans can say all they want now, but much like when Chad Owen signed here, the second Chris Williams makes a big play for a touchdown or hauls in a 75-yard grab or has an amazing punt return or kick return, the second
he gonna
has
happen.
A big play,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Fans are – it's going to be forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as soon as he starts contributing to this team, it's going to be water under the bridge, because this guy is an amazing talent. If he can stay healthy, which I believe, you know, he will, he's going to put up some big numbers for this team. He fits perfectly in with this offense.
He is a prototypical receiver in a June Jones system. June Jones mm-hmm. likes small, speedy receivers. Chris Williams is one of the smallest and one of the speediest. And I remember years ago when he left, and he reached an agreement with the team. They sat down and they had a meeting after all the animosity and the turmoil came about, after the Ticats had won the arbitration case that said Chris Williams has a binding contract and needs to play, even though the arbitrator then said, but the Ticats were at fault for not offering him the minimum deal, which they are supposed to under the CBA. They all sat down and they hammered this thing out, and he was going to be welcomed back with open arms if he failed to crack the NFL in 2013 or 2014. He came back in 2015 and signed with Ottawa, and that was his right. But had he come back a year earlier, he was coming back to Hamilton. They had an agreement in place for a contract extension that would have given him elite receiver money. So he was coming. There's no animosity here between the team and the player. So fans, I implore you, when Chris Williams plays for this team for the first time, hopefully this Saturday, don't boo him. He did nothing wrong. He did what he was trying to do for the best thing for his family. Anything we would have done. So if you're listening out there and you have hard feelings about Chris Williams, I say let him go. Let's cheer this guy on. He's a Tiger Cat again. Let's hope he puts up those big numbers that he did all those years ago.
Yeah, and where do you see him sliding in? Like, is he – whose spot is he taking? Is
that
he
is
taking
an excellent
his spot?
Question.
Are they rotation thing going on? Because like Jamal Westerman, right? If we have three on the D line, can we play five American receivers?
Yep, three D linemen. Yeah. Three Canadian offensive linemen, and Mike Daly at safety. There's your seven.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thinking Mike Jones might be the guy out here because I don't see them taking out any other – you know, Tolliver's probably not going to come out. Saunders, who I thought was the best receiver in the last game, but we'll talk about that. He's not coming out. Banks isn't coming out. Tasker's not coming out. So it's a very talented group right now, even without Chris Williams coming in. But what do you think?
Well, Tasker's hurt right now, so I'm sure that plays a role in what they'll do. I don't know if they'll start three Canadian defensive linemen because I don't know if they have the depth there to do it. I know that they have Capicotti, they have now Westerman, they do have Connor McGuff, so there is some, but I don't know if you want to really risk that. I think you maybe rotate those guys in and keep them all fresh, because I think that makes them better. I could still see Mike Jones starting, but again, I think we've seen with this offense, they only sometimes run three or four receivers. They're not afraid to throw a Sean Thomas Erlington or a Mercer Timmis in the backfield to make the ratio work. So this team this year, when it comes to what they do offensively and what they do with their players, has kind of defied all expectations to begin with. I'm sure that there will be situations where we see all five of those American receivers on the field. How often that is, I don't know. But again, with these speed guys, with these little guys, maybe it's best not to have them out there for 60 plays every game. You want to have Brandon Banks out there for 40, you have Chris Williams out there for 40, you have Terrence Tolliver out there for 40, and you rotate them all in, keep them all fresh going forward. And I think there's only one ball to go around. But man, I just – when I saw this, Mike, I started drooling at the prospects of the five American receivers. How often we'll see it, I don't know. But it's a good problem to have, having all this talent in the receiving core.
Yeah, and no knock on Mike Jones at all. I thought he's been playing pretty well this season.
I agree with you. I know we make fun of Mike Jones on the show a lot, but I think he's had a fairly decent season considering he's basically the forgotten man.
Yeah, I mean he's contributed to this team in a way this season. There hasn't been any large glaring mistakes. So I wouldn't have a problem with him still being in the starting lineup, but like you said, it's a great problem to have with all this talent out there. But if we could switch gears just a pinch, what are your thoughts on the offensive line losing some talent on the offensive line? Are you confident in this new offensive line?
I don't know if I'd use the word confident. I'm trepidatious. Right. I think we both are. Landon Rice came in and performed well as a tight end / six offensive lineman. But I think trading him tells me that a guy like Matthew Girard is ready to start contributing. He's been on the one-game injury list as he kind of works himself back into football shape. This kind of tells me that maybe he's closer to returning than not. I can't lie. I was a Tony Washington fan. I loved when the team brought him in. I thought he was great in Edmonton. I thought once they found his spot at left tackle with this line, I feel like that – with the Riker Matthews, who, as you like to say, that's my boy. Once they got that unit together, I really liked it. And seeing him go was a bit of a gut punch, but Avery Jordan is a guy they've had on the practice roster. Maybe it's time to see what he can do. Kay Okafor, a Canadian guy, has been getting reps, got some reps in the preseason at left tackle. Maybe it's time to see what he can do. If the Ticats can go with four Canadian offensive linemen, that helps the ratio as well. Like, the thing that I always go back to with this is June Jones is really new to the CFL game. He's hasn't even coached here a full season yet for worth of games. So anything I think that they might do, I just throw it out the window and go, you know what? I'll wait and see. But yeah, I'm not in love with losing some offensive linemen, but you got to give to get, right? So, I mean, I it is what it is. I don't know. I'm not happy about it, but I'm not gonna, you know, flip over the table and curse either.
No. And we were really high on the offensive line coming into the season. You know, even before the Bauman trade, we just liked the continuity on this offensive line. I mean, it seems now that it's a large chunk of it has been given away, right? I don't know. I'm concerned about it. I'm like you. I'm not lighting my hair on fire and running around my apartment. But you know, yeah, there's some concern there. I'm going to wait and see. They have confidence. They have a lot of depth on the offensive line, and they obviously have confidence that these guys can step in and fill those holes, or that one hole, the right tackle or left tackle, or whatever, and get the job done. So I'm going to have to put faith in June Jones and the coaching staff that they, you know, are doing the right thing here, because we've all seen what happens when you don't have a very good offensive line. The offense falls apart. So, I'm going to be very curious to see how they play this next upcoming game and the weeks following.
We sat here, what, 2-3 months ago, maybe, and were apoplectic that this team traded Ryan Bauman. We were pissed. Now, look, I still think Ryan Bauman is a great player. I think he's done some good stuff in Montreal. I think Tony Washington is going to do good stuff in Montreal. Have the Ticats really missed Ryan Bauman? Darius Sirocco, a rookie, has come in and played pretty darn well. And you know how you know that? Because you don't hear anyone talk about him. And when you don't hear anyone talk about an offensive lineman, it means they're not screwing up. So finding an American tackle shouldn't be difficult. How many times have we seen – Riker Matthews is a perfect example. No one knew who he was a year ago, and now he's kind of a stud on this offensive line. So I don't know. I'm with you in I wish they would have kept the continuity. It would have been nice to see an offense start with an offensive line for the whole season with the same guys from the year before. That's not the case. But as with everything with this team, I'm going to leave it in the hands of the professionals. And yes, we're here to obviously to talk about and discuss. But so far, have they ever really made the wrong move when it comes to a major? They changed the quarterback position. And if you were to tell me right now, who would you rather have, Jeremiah Mazzoli or Zach Caleros? As much as I like Zach Caleros, I think I'd rather have Jeremiah Mazzoli right now, especially because at least Mazzoli's on the field. They got rid of Ryan Bauman. Would you take Ryan Bauman or would you go with Darius Sirocco?
Is he still injured?
Caleros? Bauman? No, I think he played.
Yeah, okay. He was out for a couple weeks.
I think he has been injured, but I'm pretty sure he played in this last game. But look at of all the moves that this team has made, they traded John Chick. They got rid of CJ Gable. And those moves sucked, but it has been for the – like, none of those have been crippling trades or crippling losses from a talent perspective. The Eskimos got CJ Gable. The Ticats got John White. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just
Many other running backs. Like, any player they seem to put in produces pretty well. So, I mean, C.J. Gable has done a great job in Edmonton, but ditching his contract maybe was a good thing and trying out some younger guys like Timmis, and, you know, they brought in John White, and it's been working out pretty well. I'd like them to run the ball a bit more in the second half, but I'll get into that when we talk about the game.
Yeah, so but my whole point of this is we question what this team does, and then it tends to work out. So, yes, we're not happy right now, but in 3 weeks' time, we could be sitting here going, man, it sucked that they traded Tony Washington, but holy crap, is Avery Jordan really good? Or, man, I can't believe how good the offensive line is playing with all these – we don't know. So I think that's kind of the theme of every time we get together, to be perfectly honest. We don't know. We think we know, and we don't know anything.
We'll throw some stuff out there, but we don't know.
Before we move on, because we have spent a ton of time talking with this, we do our slapdicks, we do our bozos. Mike, you have one for a little later in the show, but I got to give mine out now because it kind of ties into this. And this is probably going to cost us some listeners, if I'm being perfectly honest, but I have to say this. If you're out there and you bought a Johnny Manziel jersey and you whined on social media that the team traded him, you're a slapdick. You bought a backup quarterback's jersey. What did you – I don't care what his name was. He was a backup quarterback, and they whined so much that the Ticats are now offering a $100 gift card to any fan that bought a Johnny Manziel jersey. I just think this is ludicrous. It's great customer service, don't get me wrong, but this is opening of the floodgates, honestly, Mike. And you and I talked about this before we recorded, and you were kind of dismissed it, and I understand that, but just wait until another big name player gets released, and I do not want to see the Ty Cats Twitter mentions if another one of the stud players who has sold a lot of jerseys gets cut, because you're going to hear everyone's going to be saying, well, where's my refund for my jersey? I just think this is buyer beware, man. I have a box filled with Ty Cats jerseys of players that no longer play here. It's the way it goes. You bought a backup quarterback's jersey. You got to eat it, man. I think the Ty Cats are wrong for doing this. Maybe not wrong, but I just think it's dumb. And I think the people who are whining about it, they need to give their head a shake.
Yeah, and from day one, what did June Jones say about the quarterback position? I mean, he never said that it was an open competition. He always stated that Jeremiah Mazzoli was the guy, and he'd be the guy going forward unless something crazy happened. So if you bought a Manziel jersey, you'd have to expect that, you know, something could happen like this. He could be traded. He could be released. He could be whatever. I know that there was a lot of hype when he came in. I know what June Jones said. June Jones says a lot of things. He's an open guy. He talks a lot. It's just the way he is. I don't know if he was absolutely sincere about what he said, that Manziel could be the greatest player of all time in the CFL or not. But, you know, he's a bit of a character. So I wouldn't take that sentence or that description of a player, you know, to the bank. So if you are complaining about your Manziel jersey, I think you might think you're a little special, or you don't know how pro sports works, because this happens all the time, my friends. Every fan of a team that's bought a jersey has been screwed over once or twice. You know, I was thinking about getting a Claro's jersey like years ago when he was first signed. He was the guy. He was the guy that was going to take us to the promised land. He was going to be with the Ticats for 10 to 15 years. Guess what? Things change. If they were going to give out refunds or $100 coupons for every player that got traded or whatnot, there would be no team. There would be no league. So, yeah, you have to give your head a shake if you're crying about this. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is, and I don't have any sympathy for them. I'm glad that the Ticats did something. In a sense, because it shows that they're listening to their fan base. But in another sense, they definitely didn't have to do anything.
All right. So after a half an hour of talking about one massive trade, let's move on to talking about what we usually talk about to kick off the show, the actual game. And I guess part of the reason for talking about the trade off the top is that I don't really want to talk about this game, Mike.
No.
Another disappointing outing from our Ticats. They dropped to 2-3 following their 31-20 loss to the Riders. They've now lost 5 in a row to Saskatchewan. Brandon Bridge is a bloody Ticats killer. 3-0 as a starter, and I hate QB wins, but 3-0 as a starter against the Ticats. If Brandon Bridge is starting at quarterback for the Riders and they're playing the Cats, I think I got to pick the Riders until proven otherwise. But, Mike, I do have a question for you, and it's one I posed to myself in my Game Thoughts piece for 3 Down. Are the Ticats bad? Is this a bad football team? Because for the last 2 weeks, they've looked like it, but I don't know. And this is why I pose it to you, because you're the genius. I need to know, is the Hamilton Ticats, are they a bad football team?
I don't think they are a bad football team, Josh. I think they are a good football team. I don't know what happened in these last two games with, you know, they looked worse, I thought, this game than they did last game, especially in the second half. I mean, the first half was okay. They have to fix some things, though. They are not a good team yet, but I don't think they're a bad team. They have some things to fix, like the run defense, right? Like that was just atrocious in the last game. The red zone production, they need more touchdowns. If they score more touchdowns, they would have a better record right now. If they produce more in the red zone, they would be at top of the Eastern Conference right now. But they have not done that. So there's things to improve. And I do not think they're a bad team, but what are your thoughts?
I look at the last two games, and it feels like they were awful. If they would have put both those games together, I think they win both. You know what I mean? Like, they were bad in different ways in both those games. In the first game, they were eating up yards, and they couldn't score touchdowns. In this one, they get out to a big lead, and then all of a sudden, they couldn't do anything. Like, it was different things that were causing them to lose. And I guess that that's why I come back to, like, are they bad? Because they're losing in so many different ways that it's becoming a little frustrating as a fan. But you mentioned the whole they were great in the first half, terrible in the second half. And that's kind of the story of this game. Like, they were up 17-7 at halftime. And they were kind of beating the doors. Like, that was a flattering score for the Riders because they had the third down gamble that didn't work, and that set up the Riders for a field goal. The Riders missed a field goal. The Cats had a punt return touchdown. The offense on that, I think it was their second drive, just marched up down the field and scored a touchdown. Like, it really felt like, I think it was 14-3 at one point. It feels like, okay, this is what I expected 2 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, it's like they went into halftime and they came back out, and it was like, I don't know what happened. That third quarter was one of the worst played quarters I've ever seen from a football team. They started the quarter up 10. The Riders scored three touchdowns, including the very first play of the quarter. Marcus Thigpen takes it 80 yards for a touchdown, and it just was like, it was just awful. Like, that was a terrible quarter of football, and that's kind of what cost them the game.
Yeah, and Mazzoli was bad in this game, I thought. He was not good. And I'm looking at his, you know, his stats so far this season, and 4 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. I mean, this is a guy that went, 15-5 in the last 9 games of the season last year?
He's thrown more interceptions in 5 games this year than he threw in 10 last year. He had 4 interceptions in those 10 games that he started last year, and he only threw 1 in the last 7. So he's thrown more picks this year so far than he did all of last year. And that's not including the fumbles, because he lost a fumble in this one. I think he's lost 2 or 3 more throughout the season. Like, the reason that I was so high, and I think a lot of Ticats fans were so high on Mazzoli coming into the season, is he had turned that idea of him being a mistake-prone quarterback who throws the interception or turns over the ball. He had gotten rid of that. 3-1 touchdown interception ratio, 15 TDs to 5 picks for the year. Those are elite numbers. And then this year, it's like he comes back, and for all those 300-yard passing games that he's had, the touchdown to interception ratio is awful. Maybe the worst in the league for a guy who started every game this year.
Yeah, it's the red zone production, he has the touchdown. Like, it's not on Mazzoli necessarily. I think the play calling was really bad in this last game. Too many hitch screens, wide receiver screens.
Yeah, what was that
way
about?
Too many. I don't know. Like, I was like, why aren't they going downfield? Like, they usually throw the deep balls, you know, occasionally and try to stretch the defense, but way too much of that stuff this game. So I'm not going to lay it all on Mazzoli, obviously. I think there was quite a few boneheaded coaching decisions in this one as well.
Now, I want to stick with Mazzoli because there was one play. Well, there was two. Okay, so and this is kind of funny, but when he throws the interception at the end of the game, like their last possession when they get it, it was the very first. It was like, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes left. He threw it out. I think it was to Tolliver, and it was picked off. I'm actually sitting in the stands, and my friend who's there with the game and me goes, he's going to throw an interception on this drive. And I was like, yeah, this feels like one of those ones where he's going to take a shot deep, and it's going to fall short. And literally as the words were coming out of my mouth, chucked it deep, and it was picked off. So that was like, I hate that we kind of called it, but there you go. The one that bugged me the most, Mike, the intentional grounding call. It's a free play. They get the Riders to jump offside. They have a free play. Jalen Saunders is running downfield. Throw the goddamn ball up. If it's incomplete, it's 1st and 5. No big deal. That's why it's a free play. Instead, he takes an intentional grounding call. The Ticats lose 5 yards, and it's 2nd and 15, and it's like, what is going on? Like, actually, that is probably the worst thing he could have thrown an interception, but it would have been called back. He could have fumbled. It would have been called back. If he would have thrown an incomplete, doesn't matter. They would have, like, this was the worst possible scenario for this play, and I don't understand why he didn't just take a step back and throw it as far as he could, and hopefully Saunders could go up and get it. It was, like, if everything could go wrong on a play, it did. Like, that was awful. Absolutely awful. Yeah. And that, to me, that is on Mazzoli. Because he should know better in that scenario to just chuck it deep and not run around trying to make a play and then throw it away and get a penalty. Like, that's terrible. That's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, and it's disappointing because you know that Mazzoli has a high football IQ, and that was a low IQ football play right there. I mean, I know that. As soon as the penalty came out, I saw and I just, you know, said, Joe, just chuck it up, Mazzoli, you know, and I expected him to do that, but that's not what happened. That was That was definitely a brain fart on his part.
Okay, so we've kind of gotten into now the what we liked, what we didn't like. Mike, your top one was Mazzoli. Let's roll into your second one. What's the other thing about this game that you absolutely hated?
Well, there's a lot of things that I absolutely hated. Obviously, we talked about the Mazzoli. I'll talk about the five turnovers. I'm just picking from my list here that I got. way too many turnovers, man. Like, there was the short, you know, the third one that we didn't get, and then there was a fumble, and there was picks. It's hard to win a football game when the turnover ratio, you know, you have five, and I think the Riders had one turnover on downs or something. So it's hard to win football games when you turn over the ball that much. So that would be a definite dislike on my list for this game. It was we just can't have that going forward. This team seemed to be doing really well in that category going back to last year and the start of this year, but it really took a turn for the worse, so we need to clean that up.
Well, and turning the ball over coupled with not getting turnovers themselves, like the Ticats are not producing turnovers as a defense, and now they're turning over the ball, like that's a recipe for disaster. And I think, look, you know what, I'm just going to go into things that I hated about this game. The run defense sucked. The Riders ran for 218 yards in this game. Marcus Thigpen had one carry. He took it 80 yards to the house. Jerome Messam, who had been invisible this season, had easily his best game, 15 carries for 70 yards. And Trey freaking Mason had 51 yards on 7 carries. Like, the Riders, Hamilton's rush defense, Hamilton's defense as a whole, has been pretty darn good this season. They got absolutely murdered in this one. That run defense was pathetic.
And right up the gut, like right up the middle on like every big run, it seemed. Ah, man, that was tough to watch. They could not stop anything. I can't remember a game where they gave up that many rushing yards. I mean, what do you do? That defense was obviously not prepared for the run game because the gaping holes that, I mean, on that Marcus Thigpen run, the hole that he ran through was the size of a Mack truck. It was easy. And with his breakaway speed, he just got away from everybody. He's killed us in both these games. Like, he hasn't touched the ball a bunch, but when he does, it's lights out for the Tiger Cats. So, yeah, the run defense got to get an F grade from me.
Yeah, like, the defense as a whole, to me, wasn't great. Like, the first half, they were. They played really well in the first half. They stymied Saskatchewan pretty much every step of the way. And then the second half started, and, like, the offense this game, it was just a tale of two halves. And we kind of touched on the other thing that I hated about this game, and that was kind of the play calling slash play design is how I'll call it. We said it earlier, too many quick screens and not enough shots downfield. And maybe the addition of Chris Williams is something that will address this, because Mazzoli's got an arm. They have guys who can go downfield and make catches. Jalen Saunders is a guy who is supremely underrated as far as I'm concerned. No one talks about him, and he might be the best receiver on this team. No one talks about him. He was probably the best player in this game for the Ticats on either side of the football. He can go up and get it downfield. Banks, we know, is speedy. They add, like, it's just, Terrence Tolliver can make plays down the field, too. Like, he might be a big guy, but he's a fast dude, too. I just don't get why they kept going. Because they were afraid of the defensive line? Did they think that maybe this would open up something deep and they just never had a chance to take it? Were they worried that Saskatchewan's defensive line, which is really good, and Saskatchewan's defense is really good, but I think we can't ignore that either. The Riders have, like, as much as we joke about the Riders not being very good, most of that falls on the offense and especially the quarterback position, but their defense is pretty freaking talented. Like, that's a good group on every level of their defense. Do you think they were worried about the pass rush? So it was like, let's get these out of the hands quicker, and maybe, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It just seemed like it was the same thing over and over again. And it wasn't working, so it felt like you got to try something new, and they never did.
They never did. One more thing I'd like to touch on is the my rush pass ratio for the first half and the second half is kind of similar to last week, Josh. You got first half rushes, 10 first half rushes, 15 first half passes, and in the second half we had 5 rushes and 17 passes. So once again, the game's not out of reach. They actually have a lead at the half, and they go away from the run game.
They were leading up until, like, midway through the third quarter, like, and they lost this game by 11. Like, at no point was this game out of reach. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like they were down by 20 and had to chuck it up to make, like, this game was always kind of like a two-score game, essentially, and it was always kind of close. Even when the Riders ran away with it in the third quarter, it was still only, what, I think it was 28-20? So it's like, yeah, it's still a one-score game. Like, it's not, at no point was this game ever, until once you get much later in the game and they're down by two scores. But for the majority of this game, it was within a score, or Hamilton was up, which is, why do you get away from the run in that situation? And John White, okay, his numbers, they don't pop off the page, and I guess we're kind of rolling into the things we liked about this when I'm going to talk about John White, but he was running with purpose. He had some good runs. He only had 12 rushes, only had 55 yards. But I thought he played well, and if you would have given him a few more rushes, could have broke a couple. Like, I just feel like they got away from it too soon.
Yeah, they didn't. There was no Mercer Timmis, or I don't know if he was dressed, or there was no Whitlock carrying the ball. It was strictly John White as running back, and that's unusual for this team. But, and Jeremiah Mazzoli got a couple rushes in there. But yeah, I mean, I was once again, I'm surprised that they went away from the run game, because it's been successful like pretty much all season when they ran the ball. So we'll see if those numbers improve next week, depending on how the game goes.
All right, let's be a little positive. Let's talk about some of the things we liked about this. I mentioned John White. The other thing I liked about this game, I'll just touch on it quickly, was Andy Fantuz. Between the first and second quarter, they did the Ticats did a very nice tribute to Andy Fantuz. They played a wonderful video of some career highlights from him in Saskatchewan and Hamilton, and even stuff from when he was at Western. They showed it on the Jumbotron. He came out, got a standing ovation. The fans got a chance to say goodbye and to thank Andy Fantuz. Kind of fitting that it came in the game between the two teams he played with. I thought that was maybe fortuitous timing, if not entirely planned by Fantuz himself. But I really liked that. It kind of gave fans of him from his entire career a chance, because there were a lot of Riders fans there, as there usually are. They all got a chance to kind of say goodbye and thank you to Fantuz. I thought it was a really wonderful moment, and that's really the only thing out of this game. That and John White are the only things out of this game that really talked to us. Like, well, that was good, and so that's about it. So I'm done with that, Mike. What did you like of this game?
Yeah, just a quick shout out to Andy Fantuz for a great career. I wish I was able to see the show at halftime or between the quarters. Things I liked, the defense in the first half. I thought they were put in some precarious situations. You know, they were pinned deep, I believe, after a turnover, and they held them to three a couple times. So I thought they played well in the first half. And the other thing I liked was Frankie Williams. You know, we haven't had much of a return game, as we've talked about in previous weeks, but I felt like he got some confidence in this game. You know, he had that huge return for the touchdown, and I thought after that he had some good returns as well. You know, not as big, not for touchdowns, but I think that we might have a returner now. Maybe he has the confidence to really take off and do some good things for the Tiger Cats.
Okay, so we usually finish off this with a player of the week. Last time we did this, we didn't have one because the team didn't play very well. We don't have one this week either, because I don't really think we talked John White. We talked about Jalen Saunders. You just brought up Frankie Williams. There were some good players in this game, but Mike, I don't think there's really anyone that deserves a player of the week, especially not something as prestigious as the Podsky player of the
exactly.
week. I don't think there's anyone out there that really earned it this week in this game.
No, I don't think so either. It's tough. It's tough to give out players of the week when they lose, but they don't only lose. They have a really poor performance.
Indeed. All right, let's move on to some Ticats news, because there is some other Ticats news outside of the massive trade that occurred on Sunday. It's not huge news, but Aaron Crawford, we talked about him last week. I believe it was that they had brought him back on the practice roster. Earlier on Monday, they announced that they had signed him, and he is back in that. He's now going to be the long snapper, and because of that, Tanner Dahl, who had taken over for Kevin Malcolm earlier in the year, has been released. We talked about Crawford last week and he tore his ACL last October. He's back so soon. It's a really great story of a guy recovering and then getting a chance again. So I don't want to belabor it too much because we talked about him last week, but it's nice to see a guy who suffered a setback, has now put in all the work, and now he's seeing the fruits of that labor. That I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. And, you know, another guy that went through a lot of injury troubles was Delvin Breaux, and he's back with us now, and he hasn't seemed to lost a beat. So you know, two guys that have had major injuries that came back and are performing, or, you know, in Bro's case, performing at a high level, and hopefully Crawford can perform at that same high level.
All right, CFL news, Mike, and the big one is we got to talk about T.O. and Edmonton. This was a whirlwind week because I believe it was maybe the day after we recorded last week, word broke that Owens had invoked his 10-day window, so now it's like, okay, is Terrell Owens coming to the CFL? And then everyone was talking about it, and then I think it was 2 days later, Edmonton releases Terrell Owens from the neg list, and it was like, it feels like, what was the point of bringing him in then, like, or signing him or putting him on the neg list if you didn't have any interest in bringing him in? You know what I mean? Like, this is not a move that Edmonton usually makes where you, oh, we have Terrell Owens on the neg list because it attracts eyeballs. Like, that's not an Edmonton move, and yet it looks like they did this strictly for publicity.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense because or there's no – like, maybe they thought if they got his rights, they could trade his rights. Maybe there'd be interest across the league, and maybe that's just not the case. I mean, listen, this guy's 44 years old. He hasn't played football since 2010 in the NFL. I think he played in the indoor league maybe a couple games, but I can't remember a receiver that was good into his mid-40s. And let's not forget that Terrell Owens has been a bit of a problem in the locker room throughout his career. I mean, do you really want to bring in this guy who has been, I'm not going to use that word, has been a troubling menace on teams, you know, has not gotten along with quarterbacks, has, you know, he hasn't done anything off the field that is terrible, like concerning the law or anything like that, but he's just, over his career, he hasn't been a good teammate. So you really want to bring that in? You really want to bring a 44-year-old head case into your locker room? I don't think it's a good idea for any team to bring this guy in. And I'm glad the talk's over with, because it's a bit ridiculous bringing in Terrell Owens, 44 years old. Last time he was, I mean, he got a tryout with the Seahawks in 2012. They cut him. No one has been interested in him since. It looks kind of silly that the CFL or a CFL team wants to bring in a 44-year-old quarterback. I mean, receiver.
You know what else I thought was silly? Did you see all the talk from media and players about T.O. disrespecting the CFL? Did you see stuff like that? See, I saw some – it wasn't over the – it was like – I saw like headlines of like T.O. needs to respect the league or T.O.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like –
I did see that.
And I saw players talking about how he was disrespectful, and it's the same junk that we heard about Johnny Manziel and how he needs to respect it and blah, blah, blah. And we saw the stupid – hit that now his teammate Enoch Mwamba put on him in the preseason, which, so that's kind of interesting. But there's why do people get their knickers in a knot about famous former like NFL players coming up to CFL and talking about disrespect? Everything you said about Terrell Owens and his history as a player is true. Have you heard Terrell Owens, and to a lesser extent we can bring Johnny Manziel into this as well, have you ever heard any of those guys or anyone who comes to the CFL disrespect the league? Like, what is it with fans and players and the media having their backup about this? If Terrell Owens, I didn't hear a word about him. It's not like he said, I'm going to go up to CFL and I'm going to dominate. Like, none of these guys ever say this stuff, and yet everyone seems to get all agitated about him. I'm kind of getting, it's stupid, and like it's annoying, and I like, get off your high horse, man. Like, he's a professional athlete, or was a professional athlete. This is a professional football league. Just because he wants to play in it isn't showing the league disrespect. It's like, I don't know. It's one of those things where I see this stuff and it just infuriates me.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with big name. Actually, I like big name American players coming to the CFL. Johnny Manziel, Terrell Owens, I think is totally different. You know, Johnny Manziel is 25 or whatever.
Well, Johnny Manziel's like 20 years younger. Like, they're in different stages.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with Terrell Owens wanting to play in the CFL. I just don't think he would ever work out for a 44-year-old receiver. Like, I don't have a problem with American players with big name cachet coming up here and trying to play in this league. I think it's good for the league for the most part. But when you're talking about a guy who hasn't played professional football since 2010 and is half 44 years old, probably going to be turning 45 soon, like, I just don't see how he would have any success at his advanced age.
Oh, no, I totally agree with that. And like that, my objections to people not wanting Owens up here or whatever it is, it has nothing to do with that. Well, I think he'd come up here and like destroy the league. Like, I think he's got the, like, he keeps himself in phenomenal shape. I think he's fitness wise, he'd do fine. But there's a lot of difference between being able to run routes and then getting popped by Adam Big Hill as you go across the middle, or going one on one with Delvin Bro, or you know what I mean? Like, these are like Terrell Owens, for as good a shape he's in, he's not getting hit. And the first time he gets hit, he might feel all 44 years of his age. My problem is people in advance of him even saying anything about the CFL jumping all over him about disrespecting it. And it's like, are we really that fragile as fans of this league and players in this league and media in this league? Are we that fragile that just the mere mention of someone of Terrell Owens' stature coming to the league invokes the idea of disrespect? Like, shouldn't we, like, the CFL is what it is, and we're fans of the league, and media talk about it, and the players are in it. No one coming up here is coming up with the intention of disrespecting the league, and I just wish that this crap like this would just stop being like a thing. Like, it's stupid and unnecessary, and I just wish crap like this would just go away.
Yeah, I agree. The Eskimos put him on the neg list, so they made the first contact, as far as I know. So, yeah, I didn't hear anything him say anything bad about the league or anything like that. So, and maybe, maybe he's the only guy. Maybe he's the anomaly. He's the 44-year-old player that can be successful in professional football. But, I don't think we're going to get the chance to see it.
All right, sticking with talking about the NFL, the CFL last week we found out is reinstating the option window in contracts. Effective August 20th, all future CFL contracts will now have the NFL option window in it. And now we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier with Chris Williams, but anyone who doesn't kind of know how that works is CFL players would sign like a 1 year plus an option, or a 2 year plus an option, or a 3 year plus an option, whatever it is. And that option year was held by the team. But when the player entered that option year, they had the opportunity, if they had a chance, to go down to the NFL and make a team. Their CFL team then retained their rights going into, like, from, I'm not sure if it was for the remainder of the contract or if it was in perpetuity that they retained their rights if the player then failed to make the NFL. And because, like, John Chick was down in the NFL for like 4 years and he was never not property of the Riders. So I think the team, but I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, someone correct me. But essentially, it is what Chris Williams wanted and didn't get, and now they're bringing it back in. It was taken out, I believe, in 2012, and it started, like, they started phasing it out in 2010. It was completely eliminated by 2012, and I think that that was part of the CBA. But now they're bringing it back. I think this is a good thing because, look, we love the CFL. I just said that earlier. American players that come up here, Mike, we know what they're here for. They're here to showcase their skills to hopefully get a chance at the NFL. Some of them never do. Terrence Tolliver said when he re-signed with the Ticats last year, like, I'm 29 years old. I've done the meat grinder in the NFL. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm happy to be here. This is where I want to play my career. And that's great. But for every Terrence Tolliver, there's five or six other guys who come up here with the hopes that I'll get some game film and get a chance to go down south. And I do not begrudge them that in the least. So bringing this back, I think, is a good thing. I think it's a proactive step because we talked about the XFL and the Alliance of American Football. If they get started, that's going to create some chaos. I think this gives CFL GMs now universally. There's no more side deals of where, oh, we'll cut you and you can go down. There's none of that stuff anymore. This is, hey, guys, you can come up here. If you want to sign a one-on-one, you play for 1 year, you get a chance, you get to go down south. I think this is a good thing. What do you think?
I think it's a good thing too. I mean, I read something somewhere that 80% of the players that go down for tryouts come back. So you're not losing a huge chunk of players, a huge chunk of talent to the NFL, and it'll help recruiting players up here as well. If you can play up here for a year and then try out for an NFL team in between years of the contract, I think it's a great thing for the league, and I'm not worried about losing a bunch of talent down south.
Okay, so I guess we can move on then since we tend to
Yeah,
agree on
yeah.
that one. Last bit of CFL news. This came across. The Alouettes made another trade. They acquired a Darius Bowman from the Bombers, and they sent a conditional eighth-round pick to Winnipeg for him. That's basically like the Bombers cut him and Montreal picked him up off the scrap heap, isn't
Yeah.
it?
How Bowman has really
He's fallen,
fallen.
yeah.
He's fallen a lot. I wasn't enamored with the move to get Bowman by the Bombers in the offseason. I thought that he was on the downward slide in his career. He's always had dropsies. even in his prime. And he hasn't shown anything so far this year, like at all. Like he's had maybe a couple catches, but I don't remember seeing him doing anything spectacular. He's basically been invisible in that Winnipeg offense. So, you know, I don't know him, but I've met Bowman before. He's a super nice dude. I hope him all the best in Montreal. Maybe Johnny Manziel to Darius Bowman will be a big connection, but I don't necessarily see it. I think that definitely his best days are behind him. He might be able to contribute something, but it's not going to be the star that he once was.
Father Time's undefeated, dude. Terrell Owens might think he can still play a 44, but man, Father Time, he waits for no man. And Darius Bowman was a great player for Edmonton for a lot of years, pretty good for Winnipeg before that, but sometimes it's just it's over. And he had steep decline last year, got hurt, didn't put up the numbers he had, went to Winnipeg, didn't do a whole heck of a lot in their six games. I think I read somewhere that he went catchless in three of those six games. So, like, if he's not even getting targeted, like, that's not a good look. So, you know, you say he's a great guy. I've heard nothing but people say he's a really nice guy. Hopefully he has some success in Montreal, but I don't know. This feels like we're kind of getting to the end of the road of his what I think was a pretty great career, especially once he got to Edmonton. He was the game's best receiver almost.
Yeah. He led the league a couple of years ago with 1,800 yards receiving. So the guy in his heyday was a great player and possibly a future Hall of Famer. But I'm not sure how much he can give to the Montreal Alouettes at this point.
Yeah. Okay, Mike. You got a bozo. We teed it up a little earlier. We teased it. Now it's time. Get your bozo on. Who's your bozo for this week?
Well, I got a bozo in Sid Sixero. He basically tweeted out something that was idiotic. Tweeted out, I'm just trying to find it right here, but the basic gist of it is if Johnny Manziel can't beat out Jeremiah Mazzoli for the starter's job in Hamilton, what chance does he have at being a starter in the NFL or getting a job in the NFL? And to that I say, clearly, Sid, you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on here because Mazzoli was the starter from day one. It was not an open competition. You cannot judge Manziel's time in Hamilton on whether or not he's going to make it back to the NFL. We're going to see that in Montreal. Like so far, it's so good for Manziel, as far as I'm concerned. The NFL teams want him, want to see him just handle his life better. Not necessarily, they know he has the talent. They just want to see him be a better man. And I think he's started to prove that in Hamilton. Now we're going to see if he can still play at that high level that he played in college when he gets a chance in Montreal. So we can judge him after the first year in Montreal or even the second year. I mean, the jury's still out on Johnny Manziel, whether he's going to get a shot in the NFL or not. So that's a big bozo. My bozo goes to Sid Sixero.
Yeah, it's just a dumb comment to make. Like, that just tells me you're not paying attention.
He doesn't know what's going on.
No.
And that makes us mad because he has our boy on Dunk. Dunk comes on his show and breaks it down. He's obviously not paying attention to Dunker. So this is upsetting.
And that's just ultimate disrespect. It's one thing to not pay attention to us two morons, but to not pay attention to the king, Justin Dunk? Yeah. You're out of your mind.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Just listen to what he says. Maybe he drops so much knowledge, and Sid Sixero is just not soaking it in his brain. So, big bozo.
All right, Mike, let's end the show like we always do. Let's talk the upcoming week. Dude, we are finally done with the West for now. The Ticats, after 6 weeks and five games, finally play a team from the East Division as they host the division-leading Ottawa Red Blacks at Tim Hortons Field on Saturday afternoon in what is, a battle for first place in the East. The Red Blacks come into this game 3-2, having just won a very entertaining nail-biter over the BC Lions in Week 6, and they're one game ahead of our Tiger Cats. So if the Tiger Cats can win this one, them and Ottawa will both be at 3-3, but Hamilton will sit atop the East Division with the tiebreaker right now. Man, what a difference a year makes, and what a difference that if the Ticats could win this one, we would just completely forget about those two games against the Rough Riders, wouldn't we? So we've spent all year, Mike talks about, being Captain Pessimism, why we'll lose, and I'm the, Mr. Optimistic, and why we'll win, but that has not worked out for us the last 2 weeks. So we're switching things up. Mike, this week, You will be letting us know why the Ticats will win. So take it away. Why are the Ticats going to win this game?
I got three reasons why the Ticats will win this week. I believe Mazzoli had a pretty poor performance last week. I think he's going to have a massive bounce back game. He's going to play well. He's going to throw touchdowns. It's going to be good. I think the running game will be a big part of their game plan. I think they got away from it the last couple of weeks, especially in the second half. They need to pound the rock, especially when you have talent like John White, Whitlock, Timmis. You know, it goes on and on. And I also think Chris Williams will be playing in this game, and he will have a big performance. Like we talked about earlier, this guy fits into the run-and-shoot offense perfectly. June Jones' schemes, you know, he loves speed, and Williams has a ton of speed. So there's three reasons why your Hamilton Tiger Cats will win this week.
So speaking of Mazzoli, I want to touch on that a little bit because he's had a couple of rough outings the last few weeks. And people, before Manziel got traded, there were even calls that they were chanting his name on, what was it, Thursday night? The game was Thursday. They were chanting his name Thursday night as the game kind of got out of Hamilton's reach. But to me, quarterbacks, both Levi Mitchell's had a bunch of bad games in this season. Mike Riley, who is the league's MOP, he's had bad games in his past. Quarterbacks have bad games. To me, it's not about bad performances. It's how you bounce back from them. And Mazzoli was all right in the first game against the Riders. He was significantly worse, I think, in the second game. Let's see what he does against Ottawa, because Ottawa's got a really good defense. Noel Thorpe is a great defensive coordinator. And this is a kind of, you know, of the season, this is probably the first real important game, because division games kind of count as essentially two games, right? Because you get a win and the other team gets a loss. That's a 4-point swing. So that's what I'm kind of curious about when it comes to Mazzoli in this one. It's not so much that he's had bad performances. How does he bounce back? Because the good quarterbacks, they play poorly. They come back the following week and they play well. So that to me will be telling. I think we'll learn kind of early on where this game's going to go. Like if they get out, if they're, you know, clicking on all cylinders, I think this could be a good week. But with that said, my friend, I have got to talk about why I think this team's going to lose. And one of them is a legitimate reason. And one of them is just history not being on their side. And that's where I'm going to start. Do you know that the Ticats have not beaten Ottawa in Hamilton since Ottawa's expansion year of 2014? They beat them twice in 2014, once at Mac, once at Tim Hortons Field. And since then, they've lost 12-6 in 2015, which I think we'll all remember had the controversy on the pick six that the Ticats had. I believe it was Brandon Stewart that was called back on what the CFL later admitted was a blown call. Then in 2016, they lost a 30-29 nail biter that had the Greg Ellingson no fumble controversy, which the league came out and later admitted was a blown call. And then last year, they lost in Hamilton in August 37-18 in what turned out to be Ken Austin's final game as Ticats head coach. So Ottawa's been in the year, it's been in the league since 2014. The Ticats have won just once at Tim Hortons Field against them. I don't know what it is, but Ottawa seems to like to play in Tim Hortons Field. They kind of have the Ticats number there. So there's one of the reasons I think they're going to lose. But the big reason for me, William Powell. I said before the season started that he wasn't a top 50 player in this league, and give me the bucket of crow because I'm eating it now. He's proven that I was wrong. I just said I wanted to see him stay healthy. I wanted to see if he could play a full year, what he would do. He's the third leading rusher in the league, and we just watched Marcus Thigpen, Trey Mason, and the Saskatchewan Roughriders go for over 200 yards rushing in this game. So look at William Powell. What could he, who I think is a better running back than anyone the Riders have, if this rush defense isn't a lot better, William Powell's going to have a field day in this one. So, history's not on this team's side, and William Powell's a beast. So I think that's why they're going to lose this one.
Well, let's all hope that Josh is wrong on this one.
Josh everybody. Hopes that Josh is wrong on this one. And I don't normally talk in the third person, but I'm with you, Mike. Yes. I hope I'm way wrong.
Yeah, and just to touch on a point, William Powell has really impressed me this season. He had a huge game last week. He had that monster run near the end of the game where he was on the sidelines.
That was very pretty.
So, hell of a running back. Hell of a running back.
Okay, so that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CFPod Network on Twitter.